From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 293, recorded live Wednesday, November 9th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Torin Billups about developing apps for iPhone, Windows Phone 7, and Android.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today, mobile development and the mobile development report card. I'm actually talking to Torin Billups, and he's an interesting guy because he has created iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone 7 applications, and I thought it'd be cool to talk to him and find out what the state of mobile development is today. From a pretty unbiased perspective, would you agree that you are unbiased?
I'm trying to be unbiased. I came to you, Scott. You're the most unbiased, of course.
You're too kind. So how did this start? You decided one day to start writing mobile apps. You needed a hobby, right?
Every developer needs a hobby outside of the corporate world, right? Sometime last year, I was working for a software company, and I kind of started a small mobile team internally. And a friend of mine, one of the developers on this team, had some great success with an Android application, and I thought I would attempt to duplicate his success, but across all the platforms, and along the way, hopefully learn this new mobile development paradigm, or what's exciting about mobile development.
And did you end up going into this with the idea that you would try each of the three and end up writing a report card, or was it just you wanted to do mobile and it didn't really matter which phone you used?
I initially started on the iPhone side thinking if I was going to fail, I should fail fast. And initially, I felt like Objective-C, from what I had read and heard about it, might have been a reach for me technically, just because I don't come from a C background. A lot of my college experience and work experience was in the managed world. So I thought, hey, if I'm not going to be able to do it, let's start with what everyone claims to be the hardest platform on the iPhone side. And I think around this time, Windows Phone 7 was just getting off the ground, if I remember right, like last year sometime. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just kind of initially thought I would build an iPhone app and then go from there. I didn't really have plans at the time to say that at one point I want to give talks or write blog posts about how these things compare. In fact, that part really didn't come up until much later when I saw a lot of people comparing or contrasting Android and iPhone development. And at that time, I was already starting to do some Windows Phone, and I thought, nobody's talking about Windows Phone, so maybe if I get a little experience or build an app or two on Windows Phone, I could kind of contrast all three, which hasn't been done that I've seen. So
certainly not as exhaustively as I thought your post was, and as fairly. And just to make sure that for folks that maybe haven't listened to the show before, I work for Microsoft, but I do not work for the Windows Phone team, and I have no particular interest either way in Windows Phone. And you don't work for Microsoft, and I'm looking at your blog, and you've got tags like Ubuntu and Fitness and Ruby and WCF. So it looks like you're a generalist. I'm a generalist that works for Microsoft on the web side. I happen to have an iPhone. What's your primary phone that you use every day?
Right now it is an iPhone 4.
Okay. So we're two iPhone users. And I've done a couple of.
But we're unbiased, right?
Well, we're unbiased in that we have a love-hate relationship with our iPhones, I'm sure.
There you go.
Okay. So let's start with that. Let's start with the iPhone. What's Hello World like on an iPhone?
Yeah, so the Hello World experience was, I tried to be nice about it, mainly because I'm not an OS X user by default. I did change jobs probably a few too many times this last year, and I'm actually working on Linux right now doing Python. But prior to that, I had always done development on Windows. So when I started to do some Objective-C stuff, of course, the first kind of straw that breaks your back is, oh, do you have a Mac? And are you running the latest version of OS X, etc.? So that part of it, I kind of decided to be nice to the iPhone story and say, assuming you have a Mac, the Hello World experience was actually pretty awesome, because similar to the Visual Studio experience with Windows Phone, you pretty much just pull down the tooling. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you have the tooling up, it's kind of file new project F5, so to speak, where you just launch the simulator and you can actually see your app in the background, so to speak. And I felt it was pretty good for being a non-Mac user too. So
they, I mean, they've got a nice simulator. Both iPhone and Windows Phone have a simulator / emulator. Xcode is what you use on the OS X, and you just say file new project, you name it, you hit F5 or whatever the equivalent is, and it runs in a little mini iPhone on your Mac.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I didn't feel it would be that quick, just from, you know, the stigma in the community that there is a lot of effort to get your first iPhone project up. And I would say, just to get a Hello World, that was probably proved wrong just by me going out and doing it as a novice. And I should probably throw a little disclaimer out saying that when I built this report card, I wasn't trying to come at it from this is how the world is today on all these platforms. It was really from, I've been doing web development in C# or Java the last 3-4 years. Hmm. And what is that experience like if you want to get into mobile, but you've pretty much been a web developer? So that was really the angle I came at. And the Hello World for me was blatantly easy. So.
Okay. But on the Android though, what's that like? What do you use to develop on an Android, and what do you have to download to get started?
Yeah, if you go out and read the post, I think in retrospect, a bit unfair to Android. You know, throughout the post, I tried to be very apples to apples, meaning that, you know, I was not having a bias, or I wasn't doing different steps. And on the Hello World side, I think I went a little bit far with Android, saying that, you know, if I really wanted to get Android up with minimal effort, I would pretty much install the SDK and open Eclipse. And at that point, it is fairly file new project like. Mm-hmm. I just personally am not I'm just not an Eclipse person. So, of course, I want to be difficult, and in turn made my life very difficult. So I decided to go the IntelliJ route, which is a JetBrains product, the same kind of parent company of ReSharper. And, you know, the experience was, I would say, just a little rocky, because not just that Eclipse is the only way to kind of get going with Android, but if you're doing Androids on Windows and you're kind of used to the out-of-the-box F5 experience I described, you're not going to get that same experience doing Java right out of the gate. In fact, I had such a painful experience. I had a coworker finally come over and help me out, because obviously I was doing Java earlier this year, and I wasn't probably accustomed to all the stuff that Java developers are on the Windows side, especially. So there's a lot of steps, and I kind of rated the Hello World experience poorly, because the more steps there are for the developer, the more chance there is for human error. And let's be honest, that's where all the pain comes in. Sure. And I felt like on both the iPhone and the Windows Phone side, there's no real human error unless you can't figure out how to download the tooling, because once you have that installer up and running, you're pretty much done. So
if you use Eclipse on Android, Hello World, while you were a little bit unfair because you went a little slightly off, I mean, off the beaten path, it sounds like Hello World's pretty straightforward on each of the phones.
Right. And one of the other gripes I had, especially on Windows, is if you were installing the SDK, the very first kind of prerequisite is, hey, do you have the JDK installed? Because you're going to be doing Java development. And the weirdest bug in the installer was that if you had the JDK installed correctly, everything was fine. For some reason, the next button was just grayed out in the actual installer. So every time I would install it, I would kind of look at it and go, okay, maybe I've messed something up. So it took me actually reinstalling the JDK a couple of different times, and then full out paving my workstation before I went online and said, maybe someone else is having this problem.
That was a mistake.
Exactly. And I found out that it's just a bug in the SDK, but that made it painful for a newbie. And like I said, I tried to come at the angle on the mobile dev side that if I've never done this stuff, how hard is it really to get going? So,
okay. So Hello World, A's and B's, if you stay on the beaten path. But when you come to learning curve, it sounds like since you're kind of a .NET developer or a Java developer, it sounds like you've been doing Java since January of this year, and before that .NET, you're definitely a curly braces developer, right? You're familiar with curly brace related languages.
Right. So you can see where the learning curve is going to, you know, take a turn towards the iPhone and kind of beat up on the iPhone platform. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I don't really have a C background, and I was very hesitant to get into Objective-C, because everyone kind of talks about, of course, what memory management and the pointer thing, of course. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know pointers, you shouldn't be a programmer and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So I came in very afraid and spent a long time just kind of looking at the code thinking, why is everything an array? You know, when you first come to Objective-C, there's so many brackets where it feels very bracket heavy that the joke is just, you know, you look at it and everything's in array for 2 months. But, you know, I initially built my product December of last year, and I kind of prototyped it for about 30 days thinking, I don't know Objective-C. I'm kind of copy and pasting this from Stack Overflow as I go. I know in the end, you know, in this 30-day sprint or, you know, time box, if you want to call it that, I'll be throwing this away. And I did actually throw the product I had away because it wasn't ready for prime time. And in addition to that, you know, what's the best thing for code quality, of course, is hard drive failure. So why not do that myself? And so I basically threw it all away and spent another 2 months kind of refining and rewriting it all. And through that process, you know, one of the weird things I described for learning curve is not just how long does it take me to learn how to, you know, new up a string or new up some object in Objective-C or Java or C Sharp. It was more, how long was it before I really felt productive? Like, you know, if you kind of equate this to natural language, you know, a Spanish teacher told me a long time ago in high school that, you know, you really know a foreign language when you sit down and think in Spanish or French. You're no longer thinking in English. And that's how I kind of labeled this learning curve, is I wanted to just sit down and boom, I just wanted to kind of be thinking in the language. But I did so much of this, what I would say, harmful unlearning, where instead of just saying, this is how I create something in Objective-C, I'm just going to run with it, I said, that's how I do it in Objective-C, but how would I do it in C Sharp? Oh, that's how I would. And then instead of, you know, kind of learning the language, I was learning it by proxy in a way, and I would always do this left-right context switch in my head. And that's, you know, I think Jeremy Miller talked about this a while back, that, you know, the hardest thing about learning new technologies is as you get older, you have a lot of things to compare that to or unlearn.
Right.
And I feel like that's what really held me back. And I'm not even 30 years old at this point, but I feel like, you know, a lot of the C Sharp, Java, now I'm doing Python full time. A lot of those things just get in your head, and you kind of have to just muscle memory it to some degree. So
in your post, you said it took 2 months of writing code daily for 2 to 4 hours. And that seems like a long time. Do you think that that's fair, that anyone sitting down on any of these things, iPhone, Android, or Windows Phone, would need to really think about this for 2 solid months pretty much every day? Or do you think that you paid an extra tax, maybe doubling the amount of time it would take because of your predisposition towards like a .NET language?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, a big part of it early on was I was so concerned about pointers and memory management. And every time I went to, you know, a local user group or a code camp and I talked to the person presenting on getting started with iPhone, they'd always say, well, you have to be doing memory management. You have to understand pointers. And about, you know, after that spike or that initial 30-day trial that I threw it away, I said, you know what? I didn't even think about memory management, and I didn't have a problem. And also, I didn't really worry about pointers. When I did that little asterisk, I just assumed that was a variable. So in my head, I mean, this sounds kind of bad, and like I said, 2 months probably makes me sound unhireable on your podcast, but the thing for me was just kind of throwing those fears, because I feel like I had, honest to God, some kind of code fear, where I was actually not very productive on my, because I was afraid I was going to screw something up. But the 2 months that I really got into it, 2 to 4 hours a day, I just treated everything like variables and didn't even worry about memory management until I got to the point where I was getting ready to ship it, because I didn't know if I was going to make any money anyway, so why would I kind of do all that optimization up front. And when I actually got ready to ship the product, I kind of looked back over the code, and releasing memory really wasn't as big a deal as everyone had told me. So I thought, you know, if I had gone into that without all these negative biases against me, I might have actually just rolled with it and said, hey, it's just another programming language. I think, like you're saying, there was a bunch of stuff in my head that I had to just kind of get past before I was productive. So.
And why were you so concerned about memory management? Just because, did you have an impression of Objective-C as not being a language that did much for you? I mean, doesn't it have smart pointers and some abilities to release memory? Or, I mean, I guess, let me put it this way. When I first did mobile development, I did it on a Palm Pilot. It was a Palm 1000, and I had, I think, 16K of heap and 4K of stack, and memory management was a huge deal. And the hardest part for me in developing on a tiny, tiny mobile device in C, again, much, much, much smaller than an iPhone, was thinking about, like, object scope, object lifetime, like, you know, how long should this array be around? And am I leaking 4 bytes here and there? Because if I do, I'm going to eventually hear about it. Do those kinds of things exist on these different platforms, on these three different mobile platforms? How much are you thinking about object lifetime?
Yeah, that's really what kind of hung me up in the early days when I was building this app, is I was so concerned about, you know, like you said, leaking 4 bytes here and there. And come to find out, this thing's got 512 megabytes of RAM on it. So why am I that concerned about leaking 4 bytes?
Well, but memory leaks are bad, though. I mean, I don't want to like call you out on the podcast, but I mean, we don't want to leak memory, right? To be clear. Do the development tools help you find stuff like that? And does the guidance and the prescriptive documentation for all of these platforms like tell you when you should be thinking about leaking memory or not?
Yeah. So let me dig myself out of this hole here. Initially, when I worked on the product, this was last December, right? And back then it was Xcode 3, which was, in my opinion, probably just the worst IDE I've ever used. And that's a bold statement, but it didn't really help you with memory management or tell you any helpful hints. Now, I have downloaded Xcode 4 recently, and in Xcode 4, it's doing kind of what you're talking about, which is more helpful hints. And I did develop an app about a month ago for our code camp locally and found that to be huge help, because there were certainly places where I wasn't auto-releasing, and it would just say, you know, hey, you need to auto-release this. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I do. So I would use the tooling in that way, and it's gotten a lot better. I personally, though, if you're going to do some Objective-C full-time, I would recommend actually pulling down the latest JetBrains product called App Code, and it's essentially like ReSharper or any tool that JetBrains makes is kind of a great IDE. And the thing I like about it is that, you know, I can transition from work and home without having to relearn a bunch of shortcuts. And that's what I really kind of bummed me out about Xcode was, in addition to being kind of a very poor editor, it's also a whole nother set of mappings you have to learn. So I'm doing Python now, and the great thing is we're using PyCharm, the other JetBrains product. And then I come home, and if I'm doing Objective-C, same shortcuts, same editor. Then I use And if I'm using ReSharper in Visual Studio, same shortcuts if I'm using the IntelliJ. So,
this episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Careers 2.0 and our friends at Stack Overflow. Careers 2.0 is the only career site dedicated to matching great developers with great jobs. Post your open dev positions on Careers 2.0 today. Reach the entire development community, all 15 million monthly visitors on Stack Overflow. The best part is you'll receive exceptional candidates, not just the massive pile of unqualified resumes you're used to wading through. We'll save you tons of time and headaches at Careers. When you're posting your job, you can even choose to receive a candidate's Careers profile instead of just their resume, making your candidate sorting even easier. The guys at Stack Overflow believe in their product so much that if you're not incredibly happy, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. And to top it off, as a Hansel Minutes listener, you'll get a free Stack Overflow t-shirt when you purchase a job listing. To get your free t-shirt, use the code HANSELMINUTES and check out careers.stackoverflow.com. Once again, that URL is careers.stackoverflow.com.
You know, that's an interesting point that you bring up, because, you know, if people who are listening go check out your app at blueflixapp.com, BLUE Flix, FLIX app.com. We'll put that in the show notes. This is an application that lets you manage, you know, your Blockbuster Express movie kiosk, and you have an iPhone, a Windows phone, and an Android app. So you're context switching. And if you're a tiny ISV, right? You're a micro ISV. You're kind of that dream startup. One guy in a garage with three apps, all branded, all working on any device at all. And you're switching between those devices, fixing bugs and dealing with customer requests. Context switching is more than just the language and the concepts. It's also, like you're pointing out, the muscle memory. And it sounds like you standardized on JetBrains tools for your muscle memory, and that made you more productive. So people should take into consideration that muscle memory tax, as it were.
Right. I mean, if you're going to be in this industry for more than a year, you're going to have to eventually be very good at it, right? And you want to be productive and have high velocity. And especially, as you mentioned, in the micro ISV sense, this is my time, right? This isn't an employer's time where if I'm learning a couple shortcuts, so be it. This is how quickly can I get a new feature out to either beat the competition or create a whole new app that someone would pay money for. And that's been, like you said, something I've reevaluated over time, because it really wasn't important to me early on. I was just playing around. It was a hobby. But like you said, now I've got not just effort in coding, but all that brand recognition work and the, you know, trying to keep the name up in the internet sort of space on Twitter and get people interested in buying it or checking it out. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of work too. So you certainly don't want to waste the little time you have, you know, kind of relearning a new editor or any other kind of context switching that's expensive.
All right, let's move on to test-driven development. Because I know that I've sat down with a Windows Phone app and thought about writing it and actually stopped writing it, got frustrated and gave up for a couple weeks because I just couldn't figure out what the right way to test one of these things is. How do you test a phone application? What's the right way to set up a unit test framework? And how do each of these phones stack up?
Yeah, I also have a disclaimer kind of in this post because I'm still not really test driving a lot of the front end stuff. So your question kind of begs, like, how are you verifying these views kind of look good and that sort of stuff? I haven't really found a way to do yet. Mm-hmm. What I kind of labeled this category as was, if I'm just driving out the domain model or kind of the class library underneath, how easy is it to get that code under test? Just the actual classes and services or whatever you want to use underneath the covers. And for that, you know, on the Windows Phone, I kind of beat them up here a little bit because the Express tooling, which, you know, Microsoft, probably like all the other vendors, is trying to have some tooling that does a pretty good job for micro ISVs who just don't want to spend any money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for the Express tooling, one of the biggest shortcomings, if you are in that group, is you can't use any plugins. So ReSharper, as we mentioned earlier, I'm just one of those developers where I really have a hard time working without ReSharper. So had I been a victim, if you were, to the Express-only tooling, that would have just been a huge issue for my productivity. But I'm kind of in a weird space because, like you said, I've done some, you know, C-sharp development in the past, and I spend a lot of time still writing C-sharp. And so I actually have a Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate, and I actually have a ReSharper license. So for me to jump in, you know, I have a test runner with ReSharper, and it seems to work. My other real gripe with the TDD side was the community. I saw so many blog posts out there saying, you know, oh, I couldn't figure out this NUnit thing, so I just rolled my own XUnit, yada, yada. And I kind of got hung up on those posts for a long time and finally landed on a Silverlight 3 compatible version of NUnit and just added that to my kind of test project. And the only real pain point at that step was telling Visual Studio, yeah, I know it's a Silverlight assembly. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm not deploying this. As far as how those things stack up compared to the iPhone and the Android side. On the Android side, it was awesome because I was using Maven, mm-hmm. and Maven's kind of like NuGet, if I equate that to the .NET world, kind of a dependency management build tool. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar to NuGet. I basically said, hey, I want JUnit, and it went out and got JUnit for me. So to write tests, that was pretty simple. And then on the Xcode side, the early Xcode days was actually very painful, but I want to give Xcode some credit today if you're still using Xcode. It actually does kind of what MVC does out of the box when you create a new project. It says, hey, I assume you want a unit test project here, right? And you can say yes or no. So
it sounds like test-driven development is straightforward in all of them, but do you get it out of the box? I mean, can you go file new app with tests and it sets you up? Like, does Hello World come with tests on these three different devices?
On the iPhone side, if you're using Xcode, it will prompt you and say, do you want this project set up for testing? So really, out of the box, that's pretty much the only one that's going to have it all set up for you, file new project.
And is that something that you missed? Like, was that a big a tax that you paid to go and say, I want to find out how one tests? Because, I mean, you know, it's a good question. With each of these communities, do they value unit testing as a tenant?
Yeah, and of course, I came after the Microsoft community there just because, you know, my experience on the Microsoft stack is more of like an 80-20. There's certainly a 20% that, you know, they're the hardcore TDD crowd. They're very loud. Mm-hmm. But there's a good 80% that could care less. Or, you know, and I'm not even a purist in that sense. Test-driven development is just my style of choice. Mm-hmm. And for me, I just want Microsoft in that community, obviously, to see the value of the beginner, kind of the express edition of the micro ISV. I would like to, you know, give a little more support to that person, obviously. But like you said, it's not that the Eclipse or the IntelliJ experience is much better out of the box, so I probably can't complain too much. I just feel like some of the pain that I went through wasn't really helped out by the community. So, of course, I tried to do my part, and I actually did kind of a short screencast that just says, look, if you have a file new project on Windows Phone, here's how you get NUnit up and running. And another issue I had is actually not Microsoft's fault, but it's JetBrains, their latest ReSharper plugin, actually has a bug in it where when you go to run these Silverlight tests, mm-hmm. the test runner just goes gray. Like, it doesn't know what you're talking about. So I actually did some research there, and there's actually a bug with JetBrains, so hopefully they fix it. But in the short term, I had to kind of uninstall JetBrains or the ReSharper 6 plugin, go back to an old I think some version of 5, and 5 actually was able to run that. So
I'm hearing a lot of anecdotes from you about, this seemed like a good idea. When I plugged that tool into this tool, they didn't quite work out. So you're hitting speed bumps that are kind of typical software engineering speed bumps where things didn't quite plug in the magical way that one thought they would.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that's going to be any new platform, right? So you're certainly not going to come out of the box and have an app delivered in 2 days, right?
Yeah, definitely. I give these presentations and I give these keynotes, and it always looks like you can build an app in 5 minutes, but only if everything works exactly perfectly, right?
Yeah, and that's never the case, as we know. So, I just tried to do kind of my part as I was learning this stuff, mm-hmm. and give back in that way to say, look, here's some serious issues I had.
Yep.
And I just kind of took a short screencast to say, this is how I solved it, so that I feel like at least I'm a very visual learner, and mm-hmm. I've watched a lot of screencasts in the last couple of years, and I just feel like I get a lot more value from those. So.
Right. Well, you've got these screencasts of BlueFlix in action, and you can kind of see what it looks like on an Android. And it looks like a fairly straightforward looking application. It's got a list, and within that list, you've got movie posters, information about the movies that you might want to register, and go pick up at a kiosk location. You do some GPS work. When you're laying out a page like this, did you lay out the three different applications on the three different phones to look identical, or did you think, I want this to look very iPhone-y and I want this to look very Windows phone-y?
That's a great question. I initially, when I finished the iPhone app, I thought, this is perfect, right? This is exactly what people want. It kind of mirrored the Redbox experience, because mm-hmm. Blockbuster Express is kind of a clone of Redbox, and so I kind of had a guide to go from there.
Right.
When I finally shipped the iPhone app, and I thought, you know what, maybe I'll make the Android app now. I did go in with that mindset that, whoa, I'm shipping the exact same product. It's just on another platform. It must look identical. I mean, I need images to be the same, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what I found was, how many people who are using my iPhone product today also are using the Android product or the Windows phone product?
Yeah, one, you.
Exactly. I mean, if people only have one primary phone. So I got less concerned about that, and just kind of went with, whatever looks good on the platform. In fact, on the Android side specifically, I just completely scrapped using custom PNG images because the different resolutions, I just had such a poor experience with that I finally said, you know what, I'll use native controls and just color them, mm-hmm. red or blue, whatever, because the image, I just wasn't comfortable shipping images to all these different resolutions that kind of, unless you have about 60 phones, you can't really be confident on the Android side. I kind of joke that it's the IE6 of mobile development, because that's how it feels when I'm actually working on a UI for Android right now.
Well, how do you lay things out? I know that on Windows Phone 7, you're using XAML, which is an XML markup language. And I seem to remember, layout systems are layout systems. I was working at Nike in about 97 or 99. On Java, and it was there's grid layouts and call spans and things like that. I mean, layouts are layouts, whether or not they're elastic or not and things like that. So XAML and XML, markup is markup. How do you lay out an iPhone application? What's that layout look like?
Yeah, so the iPhone side was a little different. I initially started doing my Objective-C views in all Objective-C, so I wouldn't even use the layout tooling called Interface Builder. Mm-hmm. I just kind of said, I don't trust, because it's a kind of a drag-and-drop tool. I said, I don't trust drag-and-drop. That's the devil. I'm gonna hand-code this like the real programmer I am. And I kind of found that, in addition to being a lot more code, mm-hmm. the drag-and-drop stuff on the front end for the iPhone really isn't buggy. There's no real issues. I feel like I was jaded. Again, this comes from my unlearning, but in my early .NET days, I was doing drag and drop web forms sort of development. And I remember some of the drag and drop stuff where I would kind of bring an Ajax toolkit down and, compile and then ship it. And then the next day, my coworker next to me would say, hey, I went to the web page and it says I'm missing this DLL or this component. And I'm like, how is that possible? I just dragged that on there and it should have just compiled it, you know? So I kind of was distrusting of drag and drop, but I found the iPhone experience was really nice because in addition to just dragging stuff on the form, it also gave me a better idea of what it looked like in the preview setting. And I never saw, from my limited experience, I never saw a view look differently in the simulator or on a real phone compared to what I thought it was going to look like. So it was very accurate. I just never had any issues. So
that's interesting. So Microsoft's failure in the past for some drag and drop things ended up jading you against drag and drop, and the iPhone layout drag and drop works very well.
Yeah, it's definitely very well. I honestly don't understand the deep, you know, underpinnings of it all, but for a kind of a, you know, someone who wants to ship an app was the view I went in with. It was awesome. I really didn't have any problems with it. The real issues I had as far as layouts on any of the platforms was on the Android side. And when I was doing my Android development a couple months ago, the only product that even offered a preview was some version of Eclipse at the time. And of course, I was using IntelliJ, so I didn't have a single preview. So literally, when I was building my app in IntelliJ, I'm just writing XML. I have no idea what this is going to look like. And if you remember the painful days of early web development, pre-jQuery and all that good stuff, you'd have, you know, a ton of different browsers open, and every time you kind of push a new CSS file or whatever, you go refresh them all and make sure it wasn't broken. That's kind of how it felt like doing Android view development, except much worse, because that preview, you had to actually either A, load the emulator to go see what it looked like, and you want to talk about slow feedback. You know, the older I get in the software world, the more I'm starting to value fast feedback. You know, the projects I've been on that have either failed or not done very well have been because feedback got so expensive that what do developers do? They start taking shortcuts, right? I can't change one variable and check it because it's too expensive. I'll change two or three, hope that I got everything just right. Well, that obviously eats up more time because if you actually have a bug, you don't know which of those three changes actually introduced it. So that's kind of the experience. In fact, when I did the Iowa Code Camp apps recently, I remember putting off the Android app till very, very last because of I just had this gut reaction. I was like, oh, I don't want to do that view development. It's so time consuming. So.
Okay, so last two questions then. Publishing, was it pretty straightforward to get these three apps into the three stores?
Yeah, publishing, I really beat up on the iPhone experience because as someone new to OS X, and obviously someone new to iPhone development, it was the most confusing process to, after I had the app built, get it kind of DRM'd and shipped up to Apple, because for one, I was not an OS X user, so I didn't really understand how certificates and all that stuff worked, but I honestly remember phoning a friend of mine saying, hey, I'm at the point where I think I'm just not going to sell this iPhone app right now because it's so hard. You know, he's like, I thought learning Objective-C was hard. And, you know, really publishing the app was very difficult from that whole certificate standpoint thing. And again, I did a screencast recently to help other people who are just like, what in the world do I need to do to get this thing in the store? But in addition to that, of course, the rumors about very tough certifications, you know, they hold true. Apple, I think the first month I tried to get my app in the store, I got rejected 6 or 7 times. It was just a beatdown.
Really? For what kind of stuff? Why would you get rejected?
You know, it's probably mostly my fault. One of the very simple ones, which, you know, if I maybe had done my research, was that when you launch an app and you're in airplane mode, so to speak, where you don't have any Wi-Fi or you don't have any network connectivity, you can't just let the app kind of sit there and spin. So to speak,
because you need to know. You need to know you're in airplane mode.
So I obviously didn't know that because it was my first app, my first rejection actually. And so I was like, okay, and I eventually worked through all those issues. And one thing I will give Apple credit for is they're very consistent. So if they go through and find, you know, three things this time and I fix those three things, it's done. As long as they do it correctly, it's done, and they ship it. One of the pains I had on the Windows Phone side was that they weren't very consistent. Like, I would submit it, and they'd be like, great, good job, Mr. Developer, here you go. And they'd be like, oh, cool. Well, then the next time I submit, like, the smallest bug, they find, like, 6 things that were wrong with it the first time, but I didn't find. So it was very weird because I sometimes, you know, there's no more heartbreak for a developer than no, right? So when you're working on this app for X amount of hours and you go to ship it, all you want to see is approved, good job, you're going to start making money. So when I, you know, those two, both the Apple side and the Microsoft side, when you get that first rejection, it was just very heartbreaking for me as you know, you can revoke my man card, but it was a sad day. So.
All right. So in closing, let's talk about money. How are we doing? How are we selling these things?
Yeah, you know, the sales side, I kind of looked at it from two angles. One, how much money am I actually making? And two, what's the community or the people, the consumers like in those ecosystems? And as far as raw sales, I've obviously made the most money on the iPhone side, not necessarily to beat up on Android or Windows Phone, because I did the iPhone first way back in March. So I've had a lot more time to do sales. But on a month-to-month basis, I probably sell, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 times the iPhone apps that I do of Windows Phone. And on the Android side, I've been kind of surprised. I haven't even made my money back for, you know, kind of the phones I had to buy to do some testing and to actually pay the $25. Because the what I found about the Android market is, unlike iPhone and Windows Phone, where it's like, hey, the app's not even $5, it's cheap, right? That's just how the community feels. Right. You know, I talk to my wife and her friends and other people in the community, and it's like, hey, you know, it's not $5, it can't be that bad. Mm-hmm. But people on the Android side, who traditionally are, you know, are known for not paying for apps, I found they will pay for apps, but they've got to find a lot of value. So, for instance, I have usually a spike in my sales when the Android Redbox app is crashing or broken, because people just want to reserve a movie. At that point, they have no brand loyalty. They're like, forget it. I just want to go out and actually rent this movie. I'll pick this up on, you know, on Blockbuster tonight, so to speak. So.
Interesting. I heard the similar things from the guy that made Angry Birds. That remember they gave Angry Birds away on Android because he's like, no, Android users will never pay for anything. So you're right. There is a definite feel in the different stores. So people can check out your application at blueflixapp.com, and your website is torrenbillups.com. I'll put both of those in the show notes, as well as your complete mobile development report card.
Yeah, you could probably also include my – I actually have a Redbox app for Windows Phone. It's the only Redbox out there today because the parent company hasn't built an official Redbox app yet.
All right, cool. We'll put all of that in the show notes. And, of course, people can read about this on your blog and pick on you in the comments.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.